Hi everyone, and welcome to this episode, the AI one, of Women Talking About Learning. I'm Andrew Jacobs. It seems you can't turn around anywhere now within learning and development without seeing AI mentioned somewhere. We're coming up to the Learning Technologies event in London in a couple of weeks' time, and AI seems to be a feature on a list of everything that I'm seeing in terms of marketing. So to help create some signal from the noise, we've got a panel of three smart guests to help walk through this complicated and complex topic. Our first guest is Margie Meacham. Margie is founder and chief freedom officer at Learning2Go and a scholar practitioner in the field of education and learning. Our second guest is Lisa Thee. Lisa is an award-winning author, TEDx speaker, and CEO of AMP Solutions, with specific expertise in AI. Our third guest is Jane Mather. Jane is an author, a speaker, and a specialist in software implementation. This is a first for Women Talking About Learning. We're recording live at the end of February 2024 with an audience who can, if they want to, ask questions of the panel via our chat. This is Women Talking About Learning. This is Margie, Lisa, and Jane talking about AI.
Hey, thank you, Andrew. I'm Margie Meacham, and I'll just kind of kick us off. I'm coming to you from Arizona. And I got interested in artificial intelligence by studying the human brain. And of course, AI draws a lot on neuroscience and on, and particularly if they're looking to understand how to make these tools more and more human-like to make it a better conversation. But what I wasn't prepared for is that artificial intelligence, as it keeps advancing, is revealing things we didn't know about our own brains, because we built them to mimic the way our brains work, and they're discovering things we didn't know about our own neural networks. So there's a really beautiful synergies, and an overused word, but there's a really beautiful thing going on. And so I've been on a mission since 2008 to just encourage our profession. Andrew mentioned marketing. There's a lot of use of AI to sell things, to describe products, to create campaigns, less to take advantage of those tools to help people learn. And I believe that's really where the future is. And I'm kind of on a mission, as are my fellow guests, to raise the awareness of the learning profession and talent developers and HR managers of here's what you can do with this. So that's what I do for my clients and my books. And I'm sure we're all going to learn very quickly. And that's the important thing, is that we learn and we start using these tools and we get used to what we can do with it. So that's me. Jane, what about you?
Thank you so much for having me. It's just an absolute pleasure to be here with you two ladies. So, I'm Jane, and I'm in Yorkshire, in England, in my very Yorkshire accent, which is not that great for podcasts, but we'll see how we go. So I write about and I speak about and I help companies learn how to get the best out of new technology, how to implement it into their business, and how to get people engaged. So I'm always an advocate for emerging technology. I love the next shiny new thing. I get so excited about how things are advancing. But the way I work with companies and what I write and speak about is, you know, I'm there for the people side of it, the people engagement. So like what you just said, Margie, about it mimics human intelligence. I often like to remind people that AI, it is mimicking human intelligence, but it still doesn't have your unique experience, your unique insights, your opinions. And this, to me, you know, nothing's going to replace that. AI and other cognitive technology, machine learning, neural networks, etc. I just want us to all be advocating for. It's there for us, for people. It's there to accelerate and enhance our work. And we should be looking at it from what good it can do for the world, for us, and not taking the conversation along the way of what people can we replace by this human intelligence? Because at the moment, it's advancing, it's getting better and better all the time. You know, some of the text to video stuff that's been coming out lately has been amazing. But, you know, it's only as good as the data and the model that it's trained on at the moment. So, yes, it's going to get better, but it's still, you know, it's still not as good as us. And, you know, it's still only as good as the biases that are in there and the data that's in there. So, yes, I love all things AI and all things new technology, but people are still better, and we've got to keep advocating for it's here to assist us and enhance and accelerate what we can do. And I'm sure we'll talk about some of the use cases as we kind of move along this session. Lisa, would you like to add anything?
Sure. So I come at it from more of a practitioner standpoint. I worked in corporate America for 18 years. And then led my own AI startup company and had an exit, and then have done management consulting for the last 4 years as a managing director of AI for a consulting firm globally. And really what brought me into AI as a field was really more of it being a tool than a solution. My passion was engaged around really trying to help address the problem of modern day slavery and disrupt human trafficking. And what I found was AI was incredibly good at looking at oceans of data and finding pearls of wisdom within that information. So me personally, I would actually say I'm kind of a technology laggard. I don't really enjoy the latest shiny thing like Jane does. But if you incentivize me with being able to address societal problems, I'm more than happy to learn whatever I need to learn to help to make our world a little bit better than I found it. And so from a mission standpoint, I love how Margie started with her mission. I'll share mine. Professionally, as the CEO of AMP Solutions, my mission is to bring innovation and influential leaders together to address social justice issues at scale. And I think AI is going to be one of those massive transitions that we can start to deal with problems that may have been going on for generations that aren't going to be solved in one lifetime, and be able to start accelerating the impact that we can have in the real world for helping marginalized women and children globally to have improved outcomes. So with that, I can't wait to talk to my fellow panelists. I'm here to learn as much as you guys are in terms of how things are being applied in the learning field. I host a podcast in this area. I just came back from Cannes, France, from moderating the main stage for the World AI Festival 2 weeks ago. So I have been immersed in all the latest and greatest conversations. So please feel free to ask me. I don't aspire to be an expert at anything, but I aspire to know an expert in anything and know who to go to. So happy to share the collective wisdom of some of the academics, government, and corporate thought leaders about how they're taking advantage of this new normal.
You know, Lisa, first of all, I want to thank you, and I'm sure Jane feels the same way for the work you've done.
Absolutely. It's so admirable. It's amazing.
What AI is really great at is pattern recognition is one of those ways to use it. And I also use the word tool because I don't want people to over-exaggerate to themselves. These particularly generative AI, which is really what's captured everyone's imagination right now, they're so impressive. And our human brain wants to see a fellow human. We are programmed that way genetically.
I like that.
And that is both very cool and very dangerous if we don't understand what's going on. You don't want to be getting marriage guidance from ChatGPT, for example, although there are apps out there that profess to do that. And as learning professionals, I think we have a unique responsibility that, you know, we are the gatekeepers. We are the ones that are people-focused, to Jane's point, that care about social issues. That's why we were drawn to this profession. And if we don't become highly proficient in using these tools and able to guide our stakeholders, someone else will be in their ear, possibly with unintended consequences. And that's one of the greatest risks, is that we have to, so AI for good, which I think, Lisa, you had a big part in, that's a really compelling phrase, and it's not easy. And right now we're seeing far more questionable uses. And so that's something we all need. Just in general, politics, the whole Taylor Swift thing, you know, those things are easy to do.
I actually think it's a blessing that the Taylor Swift thing happened, because it's been happening to women for a very long time. I've been hearing about cases affecting women as young as, you know, high school being targeted with these deep fake creations of pornography, yeah, even back to the mid, like when I started working in this field in 2015. So I think that just because I think it's starting to have this impact where everybody's catching up to the knowledge that us industry insiders and the tech industry have known for a long time. And that gives me a little bit of hope, because the only way that we're going to start to address some of the trust and safety issues in this space is when we have more educated consumers of technology that hold the companies accountable for the risks that they're introducing.
There's got to be some regulations with things like that. And I mean, usually I'm an advocate for guidelines, not regulations. But when it comes to specifics like that, it's like, how can that not be illegal to do that to her? It's an awful,
especially if it's illegal to do it in the real world. Why should they have immunity online? And really, that comes back to Section 230 and the Communication Decency Act that gives carte blanche immunity to platforms for what third parties publish on them, which was incredibly important for the 1990s when the birth of the internet was coming. But I think we all can see with some of the congressional testimony and all the other things that are happening in the public domain with the AI Act out of Europe and a lot of acts really originating from everywhere at this point, is that we are at an inflection point where guidelines are good, but regulations are required, because this is going to take investment in digital safety teams and technology, and the C-suites and the boards have to have an incentive to justify the spends that are required to do this right. As fiduciary responsible leaders, they have to say, if I don't do this, there's going to be fine. So it's okay for me to spend this money. It's very similar to what we saw in cybersecurity and privacy in that space. But, you know, I want to double click a little bit on what you guys were talking about, which is AI for good. And what makes me laugh about that is we like made that up in 2015 and nobody knew what it meant. And so it's really cool to have it like kind of come out of the meeting rooms on California, Silicon Valley or Seattle companies into the public domain. I often joke with people, so who's doing AI for bad? And the answer is most people are not trying to use it wrong. It's a very small population, but the challenge with AI is it scales and automates things so quickly that one little person can have the impact of 100. And I think that that's the future of work thing and learning and development we all need to recognize, which is I don't worry about AI taking my job, but I should be aware that somebody that knows how to leverage AI, even if I'm the subject matter expert in what I do, best in the world, most effective, yada, yada. If I have somebody who's middle of the road, average good, that knows how to use AI tools, and I choose not to come along with that evolution, they're going to outpace me. And I think that's that inflection point people need to be aware of. In fact, in the data, they're estimating now that by 2025, 50% of people will need to be data literate for their job. For their day job. And that's not just people working in tech, that's scaling into all the other industries. And education, for me, I was really surprised that that was kind of one of the first places that AI really showed so much promise. I would love your guys' point of view, because I think of, you know, education in schools or even in corporations as something that isn't usually the bleeding edge of technology. I'd love to hear how you guys experience that.
Yeah, I feel there's been a bit of a resistance at the moment, as in, oh, students are just going to use ChatGPT and generate their essays. So let's teach them how to use that properly. Let's teach them how to do it with critical thinking. Let's teach them how to double check sources. There's lots of use cases in there. But as well, you know, schools in England, they're massive class sizes, only one teacher. Then we can bring in AI. It's like virtual tutors to give people pointers as to, you know, where they might be going wrong, where they need to go deeper into something. To be able to give that personal attention to students then is another thing that I can hope to see be being used in education. But yeah, I think schools, curriculums, education in general, it needs to realise that this is another tool like the internet that is not going to go away, and we've got to work out how to responsibly and advocate for how it can help people in their education and how it can help people in their careers. So that's what I'd like to see happening.
To me, it's almost like when personal computers came into schools and work, right? We all were like, whoa, what's this? I mean, most of the senior leaders didn't know how to type. They had somebody to do that for them. And so it's one of those big transition moments where you have to get on board with it if you want to stay relevant. But I can relate to a lot of people as somebody who prefers to stay with the tried and true. It can be really intimidating. In fact, even though I've been building products and deploying them since 2015, I didn't start using LLMs until last year, to be honest, personally.
Well, and you know, and at that, Lisa, you were way ahead of most folks. Last year, most people were not yet using it. I built my first chatbot in 2003 because I just loved the engagement it gave me. And I've just started, I'm an instructional designer by trade and training, and that's what my business is built on. And I just found a fresh way to deliver e-learning, and it happened to be a chatbot. Who knew we would get here? I mean, when I was telling people that, they thought I was crazy.
Well, that's what's wild, is because this technology that everybody's feeling so overwhelmed by is actually not that new.
No.
It's new to us. The user experience is better.
Everybody here is here to learn, and yay for us. But there was an opportunity for us to be further ahead, for us to be on top of it. And we weren't paying attention. It was out there. It was happening. The information was there. But it seemed, you use that word intimidating. And Jane, because of your work is implementing new technology, you probably see the cycle over and over again. So I'm really interested in what you say. Because I thought of the calculator going back. Remember, when the calculator came out, all of the math teachers were, you know, had a fit. Yeah, people will never learn their math multiplication tables. And great, maybe they don't know that anymore, but then so much new stuff.
And I even remember at school when I was growing up, the teachers would say to you, well, you're not going to grow up and have a calculator always in your pocket. And yes, we do. We do. So, yeah, it's about moving with the times and how it enhances education, isn't it? So,
if Elon Musk has his way, it's going to be embedded in a chip in our head.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, let's not let the billionaires decide our future. Let's have a little bit of agency in that. And so, you know, one of the things that I thought was really interesting, especially in, you know, a lot of people learn from books. And, you know, as somebody who published one last year, this one's mine. If you're interested, you can find more on my website. But I think it's really interesting when we think about, you know, intellectual property and creating your own ideas. Like, where does AI come in on this? Because my manuscript had to be locked on January 2nd of 2023. And I feel like March is when I finally figured out that ChatGPT can finally solve the dilemma of what's for dinner tonight in my family, because my husband only likes to eat keto and my daughter only likes to eat carbs. And I think my son's borderline paleo and I'm exhausted at where's that intersection point. So, you know, you can use it for such light things, but you can also use it for, you know, developing your book, your course, your anything you want to scale out with your wisdom. And so how do you guys come in on that as fellow authors? Like, is it threatening that AI can now write a book in a week when it takes us a year and a half? Like, how do you feel about it?
I was ready to jump right in, but I want to hear from
Jean. Well, I was going to say, this part of me, as much as I'm an advocate for technology, this part of me that feels almost relieved that I finished my own book before ChatGPT was launched. And I was like, I feel like, you know, there's no way of anyone saying that that's not all my own words and all my own work. Having said that, you know, I will sometimes use, you know, Bard, Gemini, ChatGPT, lots of different ones. I sometimes make them compete against each other as well. And I will, if I'm writing an article or a blog or something, I will get it to say, have I missed anything? Could it be restructured? So I use it sometimes as a writing assistant, maybe a bit of a proofreader sometimes. So there's still a use for it, but... And I still feel, actually, I don't know if you do, the images, videos and text that AI creates, I can't always put my finger on why, but I feel like I know I can tell it's AI generated and not written by a person. So I want to make sure my own, again, unique experience, insights, personality is in my writing. And AI can't do that yet. Having said that, though, I'm sorry if I'm digressing slightly. One thing I am really excited about is I would love to have my own personal AI assistant chatbot built on my writing style, my experience, my knowledge. And I think that's going to come, and that's something that I'm quite excited for.
I'm probably even a little further on that continuum of using it. You're absolutely right. When my last book came out, I did not use AI as a writing tool at that time. And that was only 2020. But I now collaborate with my AI assistants every day. And that's the word I use. We collaborate. They have been trained on my writing style and my preferences and my audience. And I often have to correct them. Before the session started, I said, you have to think of these administrating tools. If you're going to think of them as assistants, if you want to anthropomorphize them, that's a hard word for me. Make sure you understand what you're doing, but they don't have the critical thinking that Jane was talking about. They don't have that wisdom. They're not going to, unless there's some great leap forward. So we have to be the moderators and the guidance. But within that, I might ask for feedback and actually get, I had Claude critique my writing and pointed out that, for example, I'm very fond of writing long sentences and I might want to change that. So that was actually very useful. And that's something teachers have recognized and are now using ChatGPT and other tools to help students individually get the feedback a teacher could never give hundreds.
You know, it's funny, Margie, you say that, because on the soccer sideline, I'm a soccer mom at this season of my life. I hear a lot of teachers talking about how they're using these tools for like peer review because they don't want to keep over tapping the one kid in the class that usually gets asked. And so, you know, I think, you know, the way I like to look at them in terms of collaboration tools is like they're a really great assistant and a really great rough draft generator. I don't expect them to carry my water and carry my message, but to me, at least, it's so much easier to be an editor than an author. And so having something to react to and be like, I don't like this, change that, do this, do that, is saves me 75% of the time that it would. And if you're teaching things like video editing, there's now so many tools. I host a web series, and we've been able to save 3 to 4 days in post for a 20-minute interview series that we publish every year. And the reason for that is you can correct all the audio using AI tools. You can correct a lot of the, you know, cutting different cameras and different angles. And it doesn't replace the team of video people that I collaborate with. It just makes them able to generate so much more content at such high quality. And I couldn't believe that, you know, we're 3 seasons in. The first 2 seasons, we did everything manually. By the 3rd season, we used AI to get these savings. And that was the year that we actually won a Global Video Award for our series. So the quality obviously was not reduced as a result. And somebody asked for case studies earlier. So I'm just going to give a quick example of that from the chat. So one example that I can give you is back in 2017, we were partnering with Thorn, which is a large nonprofit focused on disrupting child sexual abuse material generation online and distribution mostly. And we were working with them to identify currently missing children that are being sold on escort ads online. And so by being able to use AI technology at the time, at least, it was mostly trained on adult white male faces. And so detectives didn't use a lot of the tools that were available for free because their accuracy levels were like in the 70% on diverse female teenage faces, which happened to be the large majority of who they were looking for. And so when you take these grainy, low quality images of missing children and compare them to these well-lit, high quality beauty shots, you get so many false positives that it just wasn't useful. And so what we did is we used more modern techniques of deep learning at the time to be able to not tell them what the answer was, but to put them in order of most likely match. So, you know, that doesn't feel like much when you're looking at 50 pictures and trying to find one kid, but there's hundreds of thousands of these ads every day. So to keep up with it, to put them in order of, it might not be the first person that's listed, but it's probably on the top line. We were able to save days of time of detectives just scrolling through, you know, whatever platform du jour it is when Backpage went away. We recovered 130 children a day.
That's amazing. So worthwhile.
Oh, I'm sorry. There's a lot of interest in these tools. And Andrew, I'm sure we can all give you some links of some of our favorites. I just finished building a masterclass series, and it wasn't just about text and about collaborating for structure and writing style and things like that. I generated draft videos, and then here's what creativity. Someone mentioned earlier the creativity comes from humans. That's absolutely right. But now your creativity is about prompt engineering and monitoring the results and editing those results. So that's where your creativity comes in. That's what makes a video I produce from a tool very different than what either one of you would produce, is those choices. I even have an AI version of my voice I use for all my voiceovers. It is so good, it tricks my dog when I am playing it. So it took me a couple hours to train it. And so there are, and that's what we're all talking about. That's why one of my current projects I'm so excited about is a masterclass for those of us who have to create learning content to recognize how much time we can save.
Sign me up.
I'm sure Andrew will be sharing a link for it. So even if you only look at it from that aspect, and I think we have to get away from this. There is so much out there about how to use it to sell something, that marketing people jumped on AI before learning professionals. Cool. Okay. Good for you. But that's not what I want learning professionals to be focused on. There's a little bit of marketing in what we do, but there's so much more about facts and understanding and the science of learning. And these tools work equally well for that. You just have to sit back for a minute and say, how could I use that? So, you know, there are bad things people are doing. Like you said, the minority, Lisa. I'm pointing to different people on the screen as though anyone can see me. I know you can't. But that very same thing. So as soon as you see someone using a deep fake for nefarious reasons, you can think, you know what? What if my students got a chance to talk to Einstein? Would that be a more interesting physics lesson than just reading a book about it? So that's what I like to do, is look at how these things are used outside of the learning space and say, ah, I can use that. So
that's an awesome project, Margie. Jane, do you mind, since we're getting close to the end of our time, sharing what your current project is? I'm curious.
Yes. So we're also trying to incorporate as much as of AI and automating things into our learning programs. So I'm glad you asked, actually, because I did want to mention, at our last calculation, we are saving about 800 hours what somebody would have normally have done. So if a person was doing all these tasks that we used to do, data extraction, surveys, course enrollments, sentiment analysis, creating quiz questions, assessments, generating case studies and content and scripts. We're round about between 800 to 1,000 hours every month that we just wouldn't have been able to do with people. We wouldn't have had that time. But now our software robots and our AI models are doing all that for us. So there's just such a lot of use cases in creating learning programs that's there. One other thing, just while I've got the mic, I just wanted to kind of pick up on what Marge said earlier, is that humans still need human connection. So I would love to see our industry keeping the use cases around doing the things that we kind of don't want to do, the repetitive stuff, the, you know, accelerating our way. Yes, exactly. The spreadsheets and the analysis and, you know, creating scripts, and we refine it. What I would hate for us to go down the road of is constantly having AI videos. I still want us to be teaching human to human. I think it's great to, you know, to do great prototypes and use AI voices and things like that and accelerate work. But I think there's going to be a bit of a kind of a resistance and a pushback to too much AI generated content in the future. I know people who still won't use self-checkouts at the supermarket. I know plenty of people who don't want to talk to the robots when you ring a customer service line. I would hate for our industry to go down that road of, oh, everything's just AI generated nowadays. I just want to learn from a human. So I think we've got to kind of remember that as well. We still need personality. We still need real expertise. We still need authenticity. We still need humans just want the body language and the enthusiasm and the eye to eye contact. Humans want human connection. And I think we need to remember that. And it goes back to what I said in the beginning, AI is there to accelerate and enhance what we do, not to replace what we do, because, you know, we still do it better.
Jane, I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, as the wise Brené Brown says, we're hardwired to connect, right? And we need that. So that's my project that I'm working on now, which is really about helping to bring people along that maybe aren't traditionally represented in the technology field to be able to leverage these tools. So I do that in a few different ways. I'm partnering in the US with the Small Business Association to teach AI courses for business leaders. And the reason I'm doing that is I want to make sure, you know, as a CEO myself, I know we don't want to talk too much about marketing, but I absolutely hate writing about myself, but I have to be the brand as a solopreneur. So AI is really great at helping me to at least get something out there that feels like less awkward.
It's eye-opening, isn't it, to see, get if you control, say, here's facts about me, to see how it spins it.
I don't want to write a post every day about how great my own book is. Can you talk about how weird that is? But then again, I invested my time and my money into this to help bring people along, mostly women, along to be able to get comfortable with AI and see why it can impact their lives and improve their lives and their careers. So I need to get the awareness out, and I wanted to make sure. So using those tools helps me to get out of my own way as an engineer, as a woman in the world that's been taught to not brag and to be humble. It helps, you know, give us a tool where we don't have to go against our own instincts. I use a platform, a plug for this, because it's another female entrepreneur and I'm hugely passionate about that. There's an AI company out there called Lately AI that I subscribe to. It creates posts out of all my long form content for social media. I don't want to spend all my day on social media. People tell me all the time, oh my gosh, you're doing so much stuff. I'm like, I was in Calvo.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
It's audited.
I also don't feel very comfortable doing this promotion thing. Sometimes I feel like I'm just talking about myself way too much and I'm talking about my book too much. But I think we owe it to other women trying to get into the industry, trying to build their career, to be visible, to say, look what we've done. Look what you can
have in
secret. Exactly. Yes.
See it to be it.
Yeah. Like what you said earlier, you've got that visible role model. You know, we need to see more women in leadership positions, more women as authors, more women in as tech speakers. And then that's going to, you know, encourage more and more people to then promote their ourselves and talk about what they're doing. We shouldn't, I still find it hard, but we shouldn't be as humble as we are. So
So as a keynote speaker, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get out of my own way and just be that visible role model, because it blows my mind how many, and I'm sorry, this is naughty, but I'm going to say it, incompetent men are out there talking about AI that have never deployed anything in the wild and don't know what they're talking about.
Thank you so much. There are very few of us of any gender who have really done these things right now.
Yes. So be an educated audience. And if you are in the authority to help create and set budgets to bring in people, please remember that keynote speakers live on this. So you're going to get exposure to XYZ number of people in my company. Well, I don't sell consulting services and I don't sell anything else. So, you know, it doesn't really help me to come in and talk to your employee group for free. I just did a favor, not a job. So, you know, if you have the authority to create budgets to, if you can't pay for the speaker, buy some books for the speaker that comes in, all of those things are going to help in making sure that people can see people like themselves explaining why this matters and how people can get out of their own way to upskill and stay relevant in the work field. Because I don't know about you guys, but my 11-year-old and 12-year-old outpace me in learning like nobody's business when it comes to all this tech stuff. They are digital natives. And we are the generation that is, you know, getting into these positions of authority and these large organizations. We need to make sure that we come along and understand what's being handed to us, what the good, the bad, and the ugly. So even if you're using it for vacation planning or grocery lists, it's still useful to understand how it works, where it's strong, where it's weak. You don't have to reinvent the wheel and do everything net new the next day. You'll find new ways to integrate it that accelerate you. And that's the beauty of AI. It becomes personal.
Absolutely. And it's so easy. I mean, when I use the word easy, I always have to qualify that, because actually doing these programmings, as both of you know, there's a lot of deep thinking that has to go, and there's some technical expertise. But something like, I need a shopping list, I need to plan a vacation, how do I organize my busy family menu for Lisa? You can do that today. You can jump right in today. That does make you more comfortable, because sooner or later, and I suspect sooner, your company is going to make this decision for you. They will, the next generation of PCs, they're already building them, will have embedded AI. Which reminds me, way back when Microsoft tried to get us all to love Clippy, the little animations.
Clippy's coming back!
I do feel like it's come full circle. It's like, oh, it looks like you are writing code instead of it looks like you are writing letter. Yeah. Let me help you. And I think that's a great thing. So I think they should brand it as Clippy. We need to see it coming back.
Yeah. You know, Melissa, I see your comment. We started this program talking about pattern recognition, and that's what you're talking about with radiology. Medicine and healthcare is one of the great use cases for AI, because it's doing what our human brain does. Our human brains are great at pattern recognition, but AI can be a lot faster and more consistent. And yes, you know, as women, we know we need mammograms. The majority of them are now scanned by an AI tool and then validated by a human. Think of all the time that saves, and you're not, and the lack of fatigue. Humans get tired. AIs do not. However, they do get confused. They do mix things up, and they sometimes, someone asked earlier about hallucinations, that we could spend an hour just on that.
So Margie, I advise for a company that's donated deep tech to the United Nations, specifically for you, for healthcare applications. Radiology does seem to be the earliest place that we've seen this adopted in the US and abroad. What I will say is, I think there's going to be some more modern approaches to AI and data architecture that allows the hallucinations to come down. There's some cool deep tech in that space. And then the other piece I will say is, I couldn't agree more. I think it's a two-piece solution. If I'm a radiologist and I'm a subject matter expert, if I can get a recommendation from a computer and say, yep, that's right, and move on, that's way faster than me typing it in, thinking about it, doing all that tedious stuff. So think about it as the automation for the tedious stuff that allows the same amount of people to service a bigger population. One of the major impacts of that company, DrainPipe.io, has had in partnership with Minnow Health is in Africa, there's like 300 to 400 people per doctor in each country. They can't have that level of attention. And so having tools like this can help with earlier diagnoses, faster interventions, and saving lives at scale. So, you know, sometimes it's easy to have an ethnocentric point of view in an environment where people have access to care, but that's not necessarily replicated everywhere. And so I'm really excited about the possibility it can have, especially for the most vulnerable populations.
You know, and I think it's all about embracing technology rather than resisting or being afraid of it. And with critical thinking to guide us. And we're all capable of that. We're born with that capability. Somewhere along the line, some of us have lost that skill from lack of use, but it's going to be essential from now on in the human history. So one thing we need to be teaching at very young ages is critical thinking so that they can use these tools effectively and wisely. And it'll be the future generation that probably talks about, that probably gets it right. We're struggling to govern, to monitor, to, you know.
We're inventing rules for something that we didn't grow up with. It's hard. In fact, I think the estimate is even if we stopped innovating today, it would probably take 5 to 10 years to catch up on regulation for what exists today. And let's be honest, nobody's stopping. So we're going to be in this uncomfortable dance for a while. But, you know, it took a while to decide we needed seatbelts in cars, the 1980s in America. And eventually you get to that place where there's more accidents on the road than are acceptable. And you need to start putting some guidelines in place to reduce the impact. So I would love to think about a future where we include safety by design in these AI systems. I think asking and demanding that is really important in addition to the conversations around privacy. But with that said, it looks like we're running towards the end of time. So for Margie and Jane, I would love to close out with, for people that are really interested in what they learned from you, how do they keep in touch? How do they find your work and how do they collaborate with you?
Well, my company is learningtogo.ai. That's our website also. That makes it easy. So that's a great place to start for me. Jane?
You can find me on LinkedIn. We'll get Andrew to put some links in the chat. And you can also find my book. If you search me as the author, Jane Mather, Superuser Networks Software Projects, and that's on Amazon, British Computer Society, and Barnes & Noble. So thank you for asking.
Great. And for me, I will share that if you're interested in connecting with me, LinkedIn is a place where I'm highly active. That's probably the easiest way to get in touch with me. You can also go to my website at leasethe.com, where you can see my TED Talk on bringing light to dark places online using AI to disrupt human trafficking. And you can get my book, Go Reboot Your Career in 90 Days, at all the places, including Barnes & Noble's and those. And I really wrote it to help more people to start to prepare for this new world. And I hope that we can help you to win in this transition time. I think we need more diverse voices at the table creating the leaders of the future. And I think the L&D community is something that can really accelerate that.
Absolutely.
I'm absolutely going to go and watch that TED Talk now, Lee, so it sounds brilliant.
This was a new experience for us, a podcast with an audience. We love the format and we'll probably do it again. Please do let us know what you think. The different stories our guests brought were fascinating, and a massive thank you to Margie, Lisa and Jane for an incredibly absorbing conversation. You'll find all their details and the links they mentioned in the extensive show notes. Please make sure you like and subscribe to the podcast in your podcast player. It really does make a difference to help people find us. And feel free to make a donation to the podcast to help us keep the lights on. Details again are in the show notes. Next time it's the trust one. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you again soon.